Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social, demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 106 of Nerd Pride Radio. 106, that's right, Ronster sent me the commentary for this week. 106 is the age at which Nicholas Winton died. Who the heck is Nicholas Winton? Why, he was a British citizen who, just before World War II, was about to go on vacation to, I don't remember, Swiss Alps, somewhere. Doesn't make any difference. And he gets a call from a friend who says, hey, this is an emergency. We need help getting kids out of this country. This country being, I believe, Czechoslovakia. And so what Nicholas Winton did was go and look at what are the requirements to get a kid into England. And as it turns out, it's 50 pounds and then all sorts of paperwork, which is not something that many refugee families could afford. But there were lots of people desperate to, even if they couldn't get their whole family out, for God's sake, at least get the kids out. Over the course of the war, Nicholas Winton helped get 669 children out of German-occupied territories. And in return, he asked nothing. In fact, nobody even knew that he had done all this. Nobody realized the full scope of what he had done until in 1988, so a good 40-some years after the war is over, his wife who didn't realize any of this, his wife finds an old journal in their attic that documents a lot of this with lists of names and all sorts of stuff and realizes what had happened. She puts it all together. And so they get Nicholas Winton onto a TV show, some British talk show. This is, again, still in 1988. The man is 79 years old at the time. They get him on this TV show, and they're going on about this, and he's sitting in the audience watching this, and I don't know how the whole program unfolded, but ultimately it's revealed to him that the woman sitting next to him is one of the children that he saved during the war. And, oh, wow. And then the host says, all right, if there's anyone else in this audience, who was also saved by Nicholas Winton during the war, please stand up. Like six whole rows of people all standing up around him. I mean, like, I'm reading this and I'm like, wow, what a tearjerker. What a cool guy. And again, he asked nothing for it. He didn't want any recognition. And it was only because his wife uncovered it and brought it to the media's attention that anyone even knew he had done it. But really cool guy. Died at 106 just this summer. So nifty. Thank you, Ronster. Anyway, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus you're probably like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Oh, my co-host this week? Hey, it's Krampus. All right, I'm getting ready for the holiday season early, because as it turns out, Sarah Beth sent me over a link to the new Krampus movie that is coming out this Christmas. And in fact, I also then wound up seeing a preview for it when I went to go see The Visit. And it looks weird, scary, maybe a little funny because there's a lot of comic actors in it. Hard to determine where this thing is going. But it looks like a straight-up slasher horror kind of thing with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of self-awareness, but mostly it's your standard sort of horror fare. But also, interestingly, also coming out this Christmas season is going to be A Christmas Horror Story, which is, I believe, a horror anthology that is Christmas-themed and will include one segment about Krampus. And in the works right now, Kevin Smith is working on a Krampus project called Anti-Claws. And Anti-Claws, written and directed by Kevin Smith, with Justin Long and Haley Joel Osment attached. Weird. And then as I was looking it up, there was also another Krampus movie, Krampus the Christmas Devil, that came out in 2013. Low budget horror, $200,000 they made this movie for. So never seen it, don't know anything about it, just letting you know it's out there. But all of them, and here's the thing, is when I heard about the Krampus movie and I saw the trailer for it, and I'm thinking, oh wow, this could be amazing. And then it looked really traditional and mundane once I saw the actual trailer. I mean, it looks like it can be scary. It looks like it'd be a lot of fun, but it also doesn't look like it's doing anything exciting, because what I was really hoping for is, God, could you do a Krampus movie much like the excellently done Scandinavian film Rare Exports? If you have not seen Rare Exports, drop everything. Stop listening to this podcast. Seriously. Go watch Rare Exports, because it is incredible. And it is, I never thought of it as a Krampus tale. It's a Christmas horror story. But Aiden the other day, as we were talking about, said, yeah, Rare Exports. That's a Krampus movie. We're like, wow, it so fits. I mean, Krampus was not, I mean, that was more Austrian and Germanic and all that. I didn't think it was much of a Scandinavian concept, but man, it certainly fits. I haven't done the research. Maybe Scandinavian countries have the equivalent of a Krampus legend. Someone would have to tell me. Zimney Pot, hey, seriously, you got anything Krampus like? You've seen Rare Exports. Tell me, connection here? I'm waiting. I would love to hear about it. So anyway, there's Krampus movies coming up. Since I had done a whole Fingertips episode on Krampus a while back, and I love this legend, and I thought it was just this obscure, weird local thing, but it turns out that no, it's going to be turning into big money here soon. But you know what? Enough of that. Now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, and it has been busy, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Oh, first on my master list, it's Pod People. That's right, Pod People, where I talk about podcasts and the stuff I've been listening to, and this is where I would have some clever intro line like I have for everything else, but I lost the script for it. But, oh man, it was a line from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I think. Maybe a play on that? I don't remember. Someday I'll look it up. We'll get back to it. Or, you know what, if you guys are really excited for me, and I remember it was kind of a dumb, obscure line that didn't quite fit, but if someone wants to look it up and send it to me, I would consider that, because I'm way too lazy to do my own homework. Anyway, Pod People. Okay, I have ditched almost all of my Comedians Talking to Comedians podcasts, which I think I already mentioned all this to you. I talked about some of the new stuff I was listening to. I talked about the Black Tapes podcast and some other things I was listening to. And because, again, for the longest time, it turns out that most of my podcasts were podcasts by comedians who wound up having guests on their show who happened to be mostly their friends who were other comedians. And I got hooked up with a lot of these podcasts because, you know, you listen to two or three of them, and, well, they have their own friends on, and every single comedian in the world has a podcast. They all do, every one of them. And so they would have their guests on, and their guests would talk about, well, hey, here's my podcast, and here's what I talk about. And I'd be like, wow, that's interesting. I'll tune into that one. And so you wind up getting a lot of them, and you realize after a while, they all come off very, very similar. I mean, they're entertaining, great, funny, funny people. They do lots of funny stuff, but it's not, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff. And so anyway, I've been cycling through a bunch of new ones. And the latest batch that I've gotten, and again, I haven't ditched all of my Comedians Talking to Comedians. I still listen to Nerdist, because you gotta listen to Nerdist. It's awesome. Chris Hardwick is just so happy and positive, and just he's a good guy. He's a good guy, and he's a good guy to have as the head of this Nerdist empire, this representative of nerd culture. He's a good guy for it. And I still listen to Crab Feast. Oh, I love Crab Feast. But other than that, yeah, I've ditched pretty much all the rest of them. But new ones that I have are all about learning stuff. All right. And so, if you're not listening to the Me Like Trivia podcast, go listen to Me Like Trivia. It's by friends of mine and it is awesome. And I love them. There's even a discussion forum for Me Like Trivia on my own forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Go listen to Me Like Trivia. I always learn something and I'm always frustrated that they know more than I do. But hey, that's part of, you know, trivia professionals. Is that what we call them? Are you guys trivia professionals? Licensed, board certified? I assume. Anyway, but also stuff you missed in history class, which is wonderful. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but I've been listening to that one for a while. And it's two very passionate ladies who love their history and love what they're talking about. And one of the cool things about them is their perspective. Apparently, they had a listener who wrote in and said, "Hey, I love your podcast, but seriously, do you have to be so female heavy on your topics? Do you really, I mean, are you trying to prove something? You know, can you be a little more even handed?" So they went back and they did some math and it turns out that, you know, like 20% of the subjects of their podcasts have been women, less than 20%. And so it A, highlighted that that guy's just a sexist idiot. And B, that, hey, they weren't doing enough women stuff. So now they're like 80% female figures as the main figures of their stories. And it's really cool. It's really good stuff. They're always interesting. So that's stuff you missed in history class. And I think I mentioned No Such Thing as a Fish. Just the four hosts, each one brings the most interesting thing they learned that week. They all discuss. But the new ones I've got, and first one is really disappointing. Dragon Tongues. And when I say disappointing, I mean, well, I'll get to that. Dragon Tongues is really good. Really good. It's a paleontology podcast. And I have now listened to the entire back catalog of Dragon Tongues since I last spoke to you. All right. So within the last week, I have just voraciously consumed these. And I'm so excited because I'm looking at it. It looks like it comes out every 2 weeks. And the last one was August 29th. So, you know, a new one should be coming any day now. I was really excited. And then I got done listening tonight and realized, oh, wait, August 29th of last year. Oh, he stopped. I haven't done any research to figure out why he stopped, but he did. So if you want to go listen to Dragon Tongues, you really should, because this guy, he's an undergrad student, or was at the time that he was doing this, undergrad student who just loves paleontology, especially dinosaurs and pre-dinosaurs. And I mean, he knows so much, and he's just very well presented. And I really, really like it. Man, if you have any interest in paleontology at all, check out Dragon Tongues, which has now led me to doing a search for other paleontology podcasts, now that I realize that this one's gone and I have a niche to fill here. I just finished listening to the last one like an hour ago. And so my quick cursory search, I can only find like three other paleontology podcasts at all. But, you know, that was just a couple of old articles. So I'm sure there's some newer ones out there. I will find them. But that was Dragon Tongues. What's the other ones? Oh, Science Versus. Oh, this one's a good one. Science Versus is, it's, in a sense, it's a skeptic podcast. They take bits of common knowledge, popular wisdom, and look to see, okay, but how does that popular wisdom stack up against science? And researches all the science behind that particular topic. So looking at, left brain versus right brain stuff. Is there any scientific basis to that, or does the science hold up for it? That kind of thing. And it's really well done. Again, all of these are. All of these are just professional and fun and really educational. And so, oh, what were the other topics for that one? Oh, the first one that I listened to was, Science Versus the Paleo Diet. Is there any evidence that there is a real paleo diet? And if so, is it a good idea? And it's fascinating. Fascinating. So, Science Versus, that's a great one. Another one that I really like, Meanwhile in the Future. And for Meanwhile in the Future, each one, they start off with they have some actors on and they act out, you know, just a little vignette, a little 1 minute, 2 minute scene of a sample of a potential future. All right. So a future in which we've discovered the secret to extending life to near immortality, or one in which one that talked about facial recognition stuff. I'll get to that one in a minute. And then, so they give you this glimpse of a possible future, and then they explore, okay, why did we bring this topic up? Where are we in the process of actually achieving that future? How likely is it that something like that could happen? Or even if, you know, likely or not, if it did happen, what would be the logical consequences of that? It's a beautiful concept for a show, and they put a lot of real research into it, and they bring on real scientists who take, even when it's sometimes a silly sort of future, the people who they bring on take it very seriously and answer it as well as humanly possible, as well as science can, from their perspective. And it's really interesting. And then the last one, this one, I tell you, can you fall in love with a podcast about statistics? Oh, I so have. It is so much fun. It's called What's the Point? And What's the Point is from a group called 538, and they are a statistical research outlet. And 538, they got their name originally because there's 538 congressional districts, and the first thing that they were focused on was specifically political data. But now they've spread out into all sorts of stuff. And this podcast, each episode, explores some element of how we collect and use data and how it affects our lives. And so can you have, an awesome, engaging, wonderful podcast about, traffic data? You know how I love traffic. I'm in love. I am so in love that how cities collect and use traffic data, how they bring on, like, literally the city traffic manager for New York City. This woman worked in this position for years. And, she was the one that was responsible for installing protected bike lanes throughout New York. She was the one that was responsible for shutting down Broadway to all vehicle traffic. Broadway is now pedestrian only because, well, the damn thing's diagonal. It runs crossways through a big chunk of the city, and everywhere that it crosses regular traffic, it breaks up the grid, it screws things up, and so they wound up shutting it down. I mean, and it was not something they did lightly. There was a lot of research that went into it, but they shut down Broadway, made it pedestrian only, and it turns out closing an entire road actually increased vehicle safety, increased pedestrian safety, it increased business in those areas, it improved traffic flow, amazing. And she gives all the numbers and statistics to the back of why they made the choice and then what they looked at after they did it. Fascinating. Every episode of this, I don't know how big their back catalog is, but I will listen to every single one of them because, it's a podcast about statistics. Maybe that's just me. But what I'm finding is, because I've tried some of the big science podcasts, Science Friday and, Radio Lab, is that the one? I can't remember. And I've tried some of them, and I get through a few episodes, but they're just, it's so hit or miss that it depends on whether or not the topic appeals to me personally, and so I skip a lot of them, and it's just, I'm never excited about getting to them. It's so general. But when you get into one of these, whether it is, paleontology, futurism, statistics, whatever their focus is, they love it. Holy cow. They are passionate about what they do. And that's what appeals to me, is the passion behind it. I think it is so cool. And so I pick topics that are interesting to me in general. And, statistics, I like statistics. Dinosaurs, I'm all on board. All right. Obscure history stories, you bet. I love quirky history stories, especially ones with female heroes or anti-heroes, as it were. These are great. So, find stuff tailored specifically to my interest and go with them. So if any of that interests any of you, I highly recommend you check them out. I mean, if you have even a vague interest in those topics, and most of the ones that I'm listening to, these are all under 30 minutes. I mean, it's really, these are on average, I'd say most of them run about 20 minutes for all of these that I've just suggested to you. So check them out, give them a few episodes, see if you like them. Good stuff. But Next thing on my master list, it's my science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, this is the science corner that I'm giving you guys only because I've been so inspired by those podcasts I've been listening to that I'm giving you stuff that's directly out of what they've talked about. First up, okay, from the Dragon Tongues podcast, crocodilomorphs. All right, crocodilomorphs, I've never even heard the word before. I've always known that alligators and crocodiles, and caiman, for that matter, come from a family that is ancient. That they always talk about how crocodiles were here before the dinosaurs, and they're a very ancient lineage. And I didn't know what that meant, though. All right, I just imagined, oh, crocodiles have been around forever. Okay, I get it. But it's more than that. Before the dinosaurs, all right, this is in the Triassic? I don't know. Anyway, but before the dinosaurs came to ascendance, there were the reptiles kind of split into two major groups. One that became the dinosaurs and one, the crocodilomorphs, which has another name. It's escaping me. Don't worry about it. That's not the point. These are just crocodile ancestors. Let's remember that. And at this time, after the last major extinction, you've got these two forms, and crocodilomorphs turned out to be the ones who rose to ascendancy and pushed the dinosaurs aside. The dinosaurs were just very minor at the time. And crocodiles ruled the earth, all right? Crocodiles wound up being the major predators on earth. And they found these crocodilomorphs, these crocodile ancestors, that they just assumed that these had to be dinosaurs. They were older than dinosaurs, but they assumed they had to be dinosaurs because they looked so much like them. Turns out they're not, though. But these giant ones, I mean, that you know, filling the role of T-Rex, a giant crocodile, and saying it's a crocodile doesn't quite capture the whole thing, but it is related to crocodiles, but looks like this giant T-Rex-style predator. Just amazing, this huge thing. And so they diversified into all sorts of species, this huge range of species, and the crocodilomorphs ruled the earth the same way dinosaurs ruled the earth for their period of time. And these crocodilomorphs just ruled the earth. And then something happened and they died out. All right. We think, may have been the rise of flowering plants. It may have been who knows what, but things changed and they no longer fit in. They couldn't maintain their hold, on the top spot. And so, they all died out. And the dinosaurs rose to fill their place, taking on a lot of the same forms that the crocodilomorphs had already perfected. Well, the dinosaurs did it and did it even better. And the crocodilomorphs, we say they all died out, but obviously they didn't. Some of them stuck around. And so you wound up with most of them, they stick around, and they continued to diversify after that extinction. And so you wound up with most of them being what we think of as crocodiles and alligators, basically semi-aquatic predators that lurk around the edges of the water, and they are ambush predators, and they have that same basic body structure with the long body, tail, you know, extended snout, the whole business. But there were some exceptions, and they did diversify again after the whole first die-off and then the dinosaurs take over. They could never match dinosaurs at that point. I mean, dinosaurs clearly were king of the jungle at that point. Not that they were necessarily living in jungles, but you know what I mean. But the crocodilomorphs did wind up diversifying into this wide array of species, even getting to the point where some of them adapted to be herbivores on land. Some went full aquatic, going back out in the water with their feet changing into these weird side flippers. These horrifyingly huge water predators. And in South America, they wound up living a long time in these huge forms. There's one, and I wish I could remember the name of it. This absolutely amazing, tusked giant, looks like a cross between a T-Rex and a full-on dragon, but with these boar's tusks coming out the front, and the thing is just frightening, but this was in South America. South America was isolated from the rest of the world for a long time. And that's why you saw things like the giant ground sloth and other stuff. So this is, I mean, we're talking about an age where we've got large mammals already. And here in South America, with large mammals, this is after the age of dinosaurs, we've got mammals now taking ascendancy, and yet there's still these crocodilomorphs out there that are just flourishing in South America. And now, of course, they eventually all died off again. And so now we're left with just, you know, alligators, crocodiles, caimans, and that's it for the crocodile family. But for a while, wow. And so now they're hanging on. And of course, on Dragon Tongues, he talks about how, yeah, well, they had their chance, then they died off. But oh, wait, they survived enough to, you know, they diversified, they filled some niches, they spread out, they became really cool again. I mean, never ascendant, but cool. All right. Oh, and then the extinctions come around again, they all die off, but oh, there's still a few of them left. So his theory is that, you know what, when we screw up the planet, they're going to get another chance. They may never rule again, but crocodilomorphs may one day diversify again, as they have multiple times in the past. So super cool. Again, this is what got me so excited about this podcast, is stuff like that. He describes it way better than I'm doing. He is really excited about what he talks about. It's just fun. So anyway, that was one. Let me give you what's my next one? Oh, all right. I mentioned facial recognition. On the Futurist podcast, Meanwhile in the Future is the name of the podcast. They did an example of a future in which facial recognition software is perfected, which it nearly is now, and ubiquitous. It is everywhere. And so imagine that you walk by a store and they've got cameras out on the street. And from the cameras on the street, they get a snapshot of you as you walk by. They immediately know who you are. They know your credit rating. They know your purchasing habits. They know everything about you because, well, all that information is available online. All right, they've got databases. They look it up. All they need is your face. They don't need your social security number. They don't need anything. They just need your face, and boom, it ties to everything else you've got. And based on that, they may selectively advertise towards you, which is, you know, intrusive and annoying, but that's not the worst thing. But what if they decide that when you walk into the store, oh, yeah, sorry, you're not welcome here. Why? Why? Because your credit rating's not good enough. Sorry. You know, if you can't afford our products, you know, we're not even going to let you in. Hey, we reserve the right to refuse service to anybody, and guess what? That's you. All right. Or what if, you know, we've already been through this with the whole Indiana thing and you know, them passing legislation to make it okay to discriminate against gay people. But what if it's not against gay people? What if it's they want to discriminate against you based on your political beliefs, based on the protest rallies that you've attended, based on the, you know, there's nothing in the law that says they can't discriminate against you based on your previous actions that have absolutely nothing to do with race, creed, color, religion, sexual orientation, etc., other protected statuses. I'm a little disturbed by that, because I don't know. I imagine the day when you see anybody on the street. You can have an app on your phone. You know, you've paid for the service to have access to the database. You can have an app on your phone that if you can just get a shot of their face, your app will tell you who they are, everything about them. You want people to have that? Because I certainly don't. That's just, it's creepy. And I think one day that may become the norm. I mean, you know, 50 years from now, our grandkids are going to be running around with the basic assumption that, look, the information we have available to us, yeah, at your fingertips, you should automatically, anytime you see anybody, you should immediately know everything about them because, well, that's what everyone does. But that's for the future. For me, I'm not comfortable with that at all. And fortunately, there are two states, well, unfortunately, only two states who have passed legislation to protect your privacy in this regard, your facial recognition privacy. I can't remember the name, the exact term that was used. Doesn't matter. But Illinois and Texas are the only two states right now that have basically passed laws that say, no, you are required to get a person's permission before you use their image and enter it into a database and use it for reference. If you don't have their permission, then you can't do it. And by default, you know, look, Facebook opts you in automatically, but you have the option of opting out of facial recognition in Facebook, for example. But only two states require that. Only two states require that you give specific permission before they can start using your face that way. As opposed to a place like Washington, D.C., where, you know, Congress seems to think this is okay. And look at it like this. I mean, if you're out in public, you know, we've already talked many times in many venues about how, look, if you're walking around in public, what you do in public is, you know, you don't have any reasonable expectation of privacy in that situation. So, for example, in lots of jurisdictions in this country, if you are speeding, if you run a red light, and there's a camera wired up to that particular intersection or that particular location, they will get a snapshot of your vehicle. They will send you a ticket to your home based on your license plate. It doesn't matter who the driver was. Based on your license plate, that ticket comes to your house, and you are now responsible for it. And the law says that's okay for them to do. All right, then what happens when we set up cameras in high-trouble neighborhoods, and we start sending out automatic tickets based on your facial recognition? So, oh, you were jaywalking? Ticket comes to your house. Oh, loitering. Ooh, that'll be a big one. What if we just send you a ticket for loitering? Because, well, we recognize your face, and you were standing there for a half hour. Good Lord, that's loitering. And we send a ticket to your house. Again, this is really dangerous territory, because at least in today's world, in today's climate, that's the kind of thing that I think would wind up impacting poor communities way more than anybody else. The idea that, yeah, we're going to set this up in low-income communities to catch the loiterers and the jaywalkers and the people who suspiciously look like they're dealing drugs on the corner, and what you're going to wind up doing is sending out a bunch of low-level tickets that are punishing people who have no ability to afford a low-level ticket. I mean, even a $50 ticket can be devastating to someone in a low-income neighborhood. And, of course, disproportionately, that will wind up affecting people of color. It'll wind up, there's so much bad that could go on with it. So, again, the bright shining spot is Illinois and Texas. In both cases, I mean, this is Texas. This is ultra-conservative Republican Texas, who is very interested in restricting the rights of our government and interested in protecting our privacy in this way. That's a big statement. That's huge. I think that's really positive and gives me hope for the future that, look, yeah, we can worry about what facial recognition might do to us and how it's going to affect us down the road, but there's some hope there that, you know what, even the most conservative, you know, gung-ho pro-government legislatures out there look at it and go, yeah, dude, you can't do that. That's good. So hopefully we'll have common sense legislation that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the law says they can't do that. People will still do it. But hopefully, we'll see how it turns out. Anyway, fascinating. And that's from Meanwhile in the Future. And again, that's just a glossed over, quick overview of what that whole episode was about. And again, so interesting. What else do I got? Oh, all right. From the Statistics Podcast. From What's the Point? That was the name of that podcast. The episode was entitled Moneyball for Movies. And again, I'm participating in the Fantasy Movie League right now. So the idea that they have a company out there who has metrics for determining how well a movie is going to perform at the box office based solely on a synopsis of the plot. I mean, they can start super early and give you enough information to go, hey, should our studio even be interested in making this movie? Is it worth our time to be looking at making this movie? And they can get just, here's the characters that will be in this movie and a synopsis of the plot, based on that, they can, with, I think, I can't remember how they measured it, because, again, the actual numbers are not as fascinating to me as how they use them, and that's what this podcast is about. But they're talking about, like, a 70% correlation, and I don't even know if I'm using the right terminology. The 70% correlation, they can predict fairly accurately, just from that plot synopsis, whether or not that movie will make money, whether or not the public will be interested in seeing that movie. Now, that's the big difference between whether or not it's going to be making money and whether or not people are interested in seeing it. Because they can determine that people will be interested in seeing it. So what they can predict better than anything is they predict what is going to be the opening weekend box office. All right. Now, the final box office and whether it has any staying power or whether it's going to do well in overseas sales or whatever it's going to, or all the other stuff that goes along with it. That's a little harder because a lot of that then depends on, well, the actual quality of the movie. Because you can have a great concept and have it poorly executed. So, you know, it's going to depend on the critics. It's going to depend on the quality of the movie itself. It's going to depend on a lot of factors. But they can predict opening weekend box office pretty well. And in fact, as he's just throwing out examples here, this is a podcast that he recorded a couple of weeks ago, and he throws out, oh, yeah, here's one coming up, Black Mass. And he says, you know, Black Mass, is it based on what we've got? Yeah, it looks like it's kind of preparing for Oscar season, and you know, here's the big names that are attached to it. But it gave, on our score, it came up with a rating of about 280. That 280 should translate into maybe 20 million for opening weekend box office, maybe just over that. But about 20 million is what you predict when you plug that movie into our metrics. Yeah, about 20 million-ish. Oh, I wish I had known that a week ago. Because Fantasy Movie League, the professional estimates, you know, initially, yeah, people were right there where that guy was. Yeah, 21 million was the original prediction. But then as it gets closer, all the professional predictions out there on all the movie websites were all saying that it was supposed to hit 30 million, 34 million. It was supposed to be way bigger than we were expecting. And so we all adjusted our numbers and went, oh, this is going to be great. What a good week. My whole strategy was banking on Black Mass doing, you know, at least 30 million. Because I'm like, hey, the predictions are saying 34. So as long as it hits 29, 30, I'm gold. I am gold. There's no way this week can fail for me. And as it turns out, it made 23. So God darn it. You know, if only I'd had this guy's numbers ahead of time. Oh, I wish. I so wish. But he was, it was amazing. He said, you know, they run a synopsis on any movie. If you run the synopsis and you go through the thing, he said, you wind up, you know, then they attach stars to it and then see how it works out if you attach different stars to the movie. He said, you can attach Denzel Washington to anything, and the rating automatically goes up 40%. He said, Denzel Washington is the single biggest draw, the single biggest factor that will increase a movie's value instantly based on their numbers. I was like, wow, that is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Which, God, so why is he not the highest paid star out there? I mean, he's got the numbers to back himself up, right? Oh, anyway, they went on and on. And there was so much stuff. They talked about Fantastic Four. All right, for example. He said, you know, Fantastic Four looked good at the beginning. He said, but, and this was fascinating. He said, Fantastic Four, it looked all right, you know. They had the synopsis. It's the characters, Fantastic Four. We got that. So they sent out their surveys, and they did their usual thing. And then they said, okay, what if we attach these stars? And they listed Kate Mara, and they listed, Michael B. Johnson? Is that the guy who played Human Torch? They attached the stars' names to it, and sucker fell by like 20%, 30%. They like lost value because of the people who were attached to it. It's like, that's a bad sign. That is a really bad sign. Go listen to the episode. Just really, really fascinating. And that's from, again, the podcast, What's the Point? Do I have anything else? Oh, this came out of one of the podcasts earlier this week, and I can't remember which one. Someone kind of threw it away as a throwaway comment. It was about, they were talking about bias in science, in fact. And, they said, look, we all have our innate biases. Everybody has them, and a lot of times we don't even know we have them. No matter how smart you think you are, no matter how much you've done research into it, everyone's got these biases. He said, for example, look at the increase in female hiring in orchestras once they started implementing blind auditions. And they then he just glossed over it because everyone who's listening apparently was supposed to already have heard of that. And I never have. But it turns out that as of like 1970, 95% of orchestra members in orchestras all across this country, 95% were male. That was just the way things go. And in fact, this may have come from What's the Point? I think it was the episode on how employers are using data, that using data in monitoring their employees, like the UPS drivers, who every aspect of a UPS driver's day is absolutely monitored, from whether or not they put on their seatbelt, how fast they go every second that they're on the clock, how many left turns they had to make during the course of a day, how many, all this stuff, which in UPS's case, by the way, has dramatically improved their service and works really well, and most of their employees are all on board for it because it improves the bottom line for everybody. Whereas other places, they talked about how using the same kind of metrics but using them in a different context, all it does is upset your employees, it increases their uncertainty, it screws up your business. So again, it's not just having the data, but it's how you apply that data. And so they were talking about using data like this in hiring practices and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing or what context it's good or bad. Anyway, so they mentioned this about biases and said, you know, you can have all the metrics you want, you can have all this data you want, but in the end, when it comes down to an interview, managers are going to hire people who remind them of themselves. So men are more likely to hire men, white people are more likely to hire white people. That's just the way it goes. Even if you specifically are trying to work against that bias, trying to eliminate that in yourself unconsciously, you're still going to throw those judgments in there. And so I looked up the whole bit about orchestra hiring, and yeah, 95% male in 1970. By 1980 or in the 80s, it winds up getting up to, you know, 10-15%, maybe, getting up to the point where finally today, and it ran through this whole string of numbers, and finally today I think we're up to like 30% women in orchestras, which is still not equal. I'm pretty sure that, anyway, I'm not going to go into that. I was just going to comment that, look, I've seen high school band, I've seen college band, I've seen, you know, there's just as many girls out there playing as guys, if not more. I mean, got 95%, what, they only hire women because they need someone to play the flute? Is that really what it is? And I'm sure all of those of you who are familiar with orchestras and big ensembles like this, all of you know male flute players, and I'm just being a sexist. But I will tell you that in all the years I've been following my kids' high school band, which is now, you know, we've been doing this for years, starting from sixth grade for Jacob. So it's been, you know, how long is that now? 8 years, 9 years that we've been doing this? There's never been a dude playing a flute in their school band, starting from sixth grade on. No dude plays the flute. That's just the way it goes. That is universally known, at least in this area, as a girl's instrument. And no guy would be caught dead playing that thing. That's just how it happens. So, and here's the thing. People who are hiring for orchestra positions, I'm sure there's lots of sexist, you know, and bigoted people out there. That happens in any field. But you would think that most of them are, you know, decent, open-minded people who are not, at least they don't believe they are racist or sexist, and that they're certainly trying to be as fair as humanly possible in their hiring practices, and yet still wind up hiring majority males all the time. And so to combat that, they started, because, you know, it's music, you can do this, they started doing the auditions behind a screen, that all the applicants come out and they sit behind a screen and they audition completely blind, so that the people who are judging and hiring have no idea if it's male or female, have no idea what their name is. All they know is that this is applicant number 14, and here's the instrument, and here they go. And they even went so far as to start having applicants in some areas remove their footwear, because the way the audition area was set up, you can hear their shoes walking across the floor to get to their spot. And in a lot of cases, very easy to tell when it's a woman walking in heels versus a guy. And they were afraid that was still biasing some people, because, yeah, even without being able to see them. You can still hear them, and there's still some clues there. And so they've done as much as possible to eliminate that. And when they've done that, they've found out that, oh, look, we hire an awful lot of women. Well, somehow, just not knowing if it's male or female, we wind up hiring a lot more women. That's just amazing to me. Not surprising, I guess, but just, I mean, that it's so marked, so pronounced. It's just crazy. So anyway, this is all fascinating stuff, all amazing, beautiful, wonderful science that I got from listening to science podcasts this week because they're beautiful and they make me happy. And again, if you guys are interested, go tune into these podcasts. I've done this entire episode today talking about nothing but these podcasts and the stuff I get out of them, and they're awesome. So that's enough of that. You know what's left? Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And oh, I got more entries this week. You guys sent me so many last week, and I still got some more trailing in this week. Sarah Beth got me some. Thank you so much. You are awesome. I appreciate your kind words. You are very, very sweet. Thank you. My wife sent in a bunch more, she's been gathering questions from my kids. Turns out every time my kids ask me a really difficult question and I say, oh, God, I don't know, we'll have to look that up. It's usually in the middle of homework because they like to ask me questions so that I will then go off on some rambling science story or history story or whatever, because I do the same thing all day long that I do right here. And they know how easily distracted I can get because I get so passionate about stuff. And so they'll ask me a question. I'll be like, I don't know. We'll have to look that up. Oh, but we don't have time now. We have to get back to homework or whatever it is we're doing. And so my wife has been writing those down and then submitting them as Pod-O-Matic questions. So specifically stuff that I don't know. It'll be cool. Hopefully we get some of those today. But our first number is 62. And when I have my Pod-O-Matic list in front of me, I can look at it and see that 62 is from, well, speaking of the devil, it's from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, what D&D-style movie, genre, not necessarily the actual D&D movies, do you think would make the best drinking game? Oh, that. I have never thought of movies in that context. Let me run down what I think of as D&D-style movies. And because, look, when I think D&D movie, the first thing I think of is The 13th Warrior. But I don't think that's a really good one for a drinking game. But, like Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings would probably be a good one. Because you can have things, because there's such a diversity of types of beings in it that, I don't know, do you have drinks every time someone decapitates an orc? Every time Boromir takes an arrow? Because, oh man, that one scene. Every time Gollum says precious? I mean, come on, that's an easy one. All right, or, you know, anytime one of the wizards comes on screen, or anytime, you know, you tie things into, you know, the elves or the dwarves or any specific, man, I wish I were more of an expert on the movies. I've seen each of them once, and I know all the popular quotes. You know, one does not simply walk into Mordor. I know the main stuff, but I don't know enough of the details to know what really works there. But I think Lord of the Rings would probably be the very best one, and not including The Hobbit. The Hobbit is a different style and would require a different. I mean, it would also work as a good drinking game, I'm sure, but. I mean, anytime the Eagles save us, we have to chug a beer. There's lots of method. I think Lord of the Rings is probably the best one. I don't know all the details of the Lord of the Rings drinking game. Oh, wait, I bet I do. Hold on, I'm going to go look it up. Wow, how tough was that? I knew there'd be one out here. It even has graphics to go with it. Let's see. One, drink anytime there's a close-up of the ring. Anytime there's a panoramic scenery shot. Anytime Merry and Pippin get up to shenanigans, anytime Frodo wanders away from the group, oh, that does happen a lot. Every time Gandalf goes into serious wizard mode. See, these are great. Anytime Legolas doesn't understand emotions or says something really obvious, these are awesome. Anytime the entire fellowship is on screen, this is, see, these are great. And then there's hardcore rules down below. Anytime Legolas looks into the distance, anytime the ring is referred to as precious. See, I was right on. Yeah, Lord of the Rings is probably a really good one. So much material to work with. So I'm on board with that. 49, although I don't believe in drinking games like that myself because, I don't get drunk often enough. I can't imagine how bad that would be. But anyway, let's get down to 49, or up to 49 from where I was. 49 is from Kyle. Hey, brother Kyle. Kyle says, oh, this is a long one. Did you watch the movie Her? No. He says, I did, and let me tell you, I did not like it. Enough that I turned it off after 45 minutes. I'm having this weird thing as I get older that all those movies targeted at 20-somethings, you know, the ones where people are apathetic and wondering what their purpose in life is, I just can't relate to those anymore. But I guess that happens when you have kids, right? Yeah, you know what? I would think so. Because enough that I never even watched Her, for example. What was the one? Inside Llewyn Davis? Is that the name of the movie? Or Inside? I mean, there's a bunch of these movies that are like this. These 20-somethings looking for the meaning of life. I get exactly what you're talking about because I didn't even watch Her. I heard nothing but raves for it. Raves for this movie, that it was supposed to be absolutely brilliantly done. Joaquin Phoenix is just, it's a tour de force. It's a great film. It has this very deep message and it's powerful. And I've never once had an urge to see it. And nothing about that appeals to me. Not even for a second. And I never thought of it as being in terms of that searching for the meaning of life context. But I see what you're talking about. I don't know if that's exactly right on, but it sounds pretty close. But anyway, yeah, no, I've never seen Her. I never want to. But, you know, all of you who did and loved it, go ahead and write in and tell me. Because I'm sure lots of you enjoyed it. Because, you know what? 90% of the world seemed to enjoy it. So it's out there. But hey, R2's rolled. Number 48, also from my brother Kyle. Kyle says, all right, choose one. You suddenly have a 30 dexterity in real life, but you always have to be riding a unicycle, except when you sleep. Then you can just sit on it and lean against a wall. So dexterity of 30, but I'm required to be on a unicycle at all times. Or I can have microscopic and telescopic vision, but you can only see out of one eye, thus no depth perception. And you can no longer see the color blue. Go, seriously? Yeah, because you realize that lacking depth perception was not quite detrimental enough. Yeah, you gotta take away the color blue. What does blue look like to me? Does blue look like another shade of green? Is it just gray? Does it just go to gray for me? It's now just shades of gray. Does it become red? That would make a difference for me, I think. I would probably have to go with the vision thing, simply because the unicycle is a deal breaker. I would love to have a 30 dexterity. I would love to have a 30 dexterity. That's amazing. You realize, I mean, that's what, a plus 10 bonus? That's amazing. A plus 10? A plus 10. I mean, I'm already sleight of hand and stealth and all sorts of other acrobatics, all this other stuff that, you know, I'm running along equivalent to, you know, a sixth level thief. And I'm just a nobody. That's just based on my innate bonuses. I don't even have to have levels. I don't have to have class skills. I got, heck with all that. I can just do it. That would be amazing. And I would love that, but the unicycle's a deal breaker. I just can't do it. Oh, man, that would be really, because it's so awkward. And, I mean, heck, I wouldn't even be able to get into my own house. I'd have to adapt my house to get me a unicycle ramp. I can't. Doorways? You can't go through doorways on your unicycle without having to duck it. Well, I guess if I built a low unicycle, I'm sitting on it after all. So, if I had a low unicycle, but I can't sleep with, I can't just lay down and cuddle with my wife to watch a movie. I mean, we have to have, what, some special rig so that, what, she leans her unicycle against mine so we can hold each other while we're watching TV? Is that what we do? No, that's deal breaker. Gotta go with the vision thing. 38 is, geez, Kyle, what is up with you? This is great. Kyle says, what kind of mileage are you getting lately? I think my Taurus is getting 25 in the city. It's probably closer to 22, 23 in the city, I'm guessing. And then I get like 28 on the highway. Sometimes as high as 30 or 31, depends on the day, the road, the weather. But yeah, about that. I'm going to guess 22, 23 in the city and 28 on the road. That's my best estimate. 50. 50 is from Mrs. Darks. And she says, talk about one of the other seven kinds of nerd that you only wish you were nerdy enough to be. I will do you one better than that. You've already listened to all the episodes, so you know I was once on a quest to be a cheese nerd. I would love to be a cheese nerd. How cool would it be to just know cheeses? Because I love cheese. I love cheese, and I love lots of different kinds of cheese. But I'm not enough of a cheese nerd to really be specific about stuff. That would just be a cool, fun one. But more than that, I wish I was a music nerd. I really wish I was a music nerd. I know this is an achievable goal. All right, I understand that. But right now, it's more hours of investment than I want to put into it. I love music. I love all kinds of music. And I have a lot of respect for people who have musical talent. And I love that my kids are all involved in band and choir and have pursued that. I think that's wonderful. And I wish I could play a musical instrument. I wish I could read music. I wish I knew more about music. I wish I knew more about the classics. I wish I knew more about all sorts of music history. I wish I was a music nerd. I would love to be a music nerd. Now look, you live with a music nerd. Is it all it's cracked up to be? I mean, he seems like a pretty cool guy. I mean, I'm just guessing, you know, having shared a room with him for 3 days, 4 days, the best 4 days in gaming. So yeah, I don't know. A music nerd would be really, if I had to pick one kind of nerd that I am not, but I really wish I was, music nerd would be my first choice. But any particular narrow set of knowledge would be kind of cool to know. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind being a sports nerd. I mean, I'm not even into sports. I don't care. But wouldn't it be cool to be able to walk into parties and just have that knowledge at your fingertips? There's all sorts of stuff. Anything. I wish I was a car nerd. I wish I was one of those guys that had some innate talent when I walked out to a vehicle. I would love to have that. I would love to be able to have things break down and have a fair idea right off the bat of what might be wrong with it instead of having to, you know, go ask a bunch of people, look things up on the internet, check out some YouTube videos. Oh, hey, I think I can fix that. Maybe if that's what's really wrong with it. I don't know. You know, it would be nice to have some of that knowledge. But music nerd, first choice. 35. 35 comes from my brother Kyle. What a theme here. Kyle says, F, Mary, Kill. Smash Brothers Edition, Ness, Jigglypuff, Rosalina. All right. I don't know enough about Ness, except that isn't Ness a little kid? I'm pretty sure Ness is a little kid, which I think means I gotta kill Ness, because any other answer is wrong. So, I'm sorry. For those of you who are not familiar with F, Mary, Kill somehow, I am given three choices, and I have to pick One for the F, which is a one-night stand, a night of passion. The second one, to marry and stay with for the rest of my life with no possibility of divorce. And then kill. I have to pick one of them to kill. So I'm going to kill Ness. Got to. No choice on that one. Which leaves me with Jigglypuff and Rosalina. I can't see being married to Jigglypuff for the rest of my life. So Jigglypuff and I are going to have that one glorious night of beautiful, beautiful lovemaking. And then I'll have to marry Rosalina. Eh, that wasn't as tough as I thought. 75. 75 is from... It's my wife. Hey, Lisa. Lisa says, have you ever been in a physical confrontation? And if so, tell about it. Have I ever been in a fight? Have I ever been in a shoving match? You know what? The closest I've ever come to being in a fight is, I think, my cousin Rob and I threw punches at one another when we were in, how old was I? We were living in, we were in the house in Papillion, so I couldn't have been but 13. That would be the last physical confrontation I've ever been in. That's really it. I can't even think of a time when I was worried I was going to get in a fight. And even then, even with Rob, I can't remember what we were mad about. I can't remember who. I think he was the one that threw a punch at me, but I can't remember. But I know that there was no facial contact, and it didn't turn into an all-out fight. I mean, it was like one or two swings from each of us, and then we just kind of backed off and decided to go be pissy in our own corners. It wasn't even really a physical confrontation, but that's the closest I think I ever got. And other than that, no, I got nothing. I've lived a very privileged and sheltered life where physical confrontation is not something I ever had to worry about that much. I did have one that scared me. When my roommate Kai and I in college, we were in Florida on spring break. We went down to the mall for something. And as we were coming around the corner, I was driving and some dude cut me off. And so I flipped him off because that was back when I flipped people off. And he then followed us, chased us around the parking lot until we finally parked. And then he got out, and he was in a teeny tiny little car. So was I. He was in a teeny tiny little car, but he was huge. I mean, big old cowboy looking dude. And he comes out, and he was much older than we were, and came over and got his finger right up in my face and threatened us, you little punk bastards, if I ever, blah, blah, blah. All right, whatever. And there was no danger that he was actually going to hit us. I mean, unless we had mouthed off, which clearly we were not going to do because he was way bigger than us. And he looked like he had been in physical confrontations before. So there was no actual danger of us being in a fight. It was just him yelling at us. But at the time I thought, oh God, he's going to pound us. Oh my God, we're dead. We're completely dead. What do we do? That was bad. That was bad. That was one of the things that factored into me deciding I was never going to flip people off again. Although that wasn't the last time I did. The last time I flipped anybody off, maybe I've told you guys this story. It was actually when I was a social worker and I was out of town for a conference. And this was, again, when I was a social worker, this means I was like 24 at the time. So this is still 20 years ago. And I was out of town for a conference. And I was pulling out of the Pack and Save parking lot, in fact. And again, somebody cut me off. And so I flipped him off. And it was a car full of adults. So like 5 people in this car. And it was clearly such a mix and match of people that I think they were like a bunch of people who just all came from the same office and they just happened to be out to lunch together. And so I flip them off, and as they're coming around the corner at the side of the car, and then as they turn out the back of the car, all of them just start waving at me, and they're grinning and laughing and making faces at me. And just, it was like I flip them off, so all of them go, oh, hey, hi, yeah, we see you. Yeah, you're awesome. I mean, it was just, I started laughing, and I was like, okay, yeah, you know what? Flipping people off is just stupid anyway. That was way better. That was way better. So, anyway, that's when I stopped flipping people off because it just wasn't worth it. It just, again, it spreads hate. You know how I'm against hate, right? All right. There we go. Enough of that topic. 75 again. It's like you're not trying. Shake that sucker up. 93. That one I can take. All right. 93 is from my brother Kyle again. Kyle says, will human life die on Earth? To answer that question, eventually, yes. If so, will any intelligence created by us live past the Earth's existence? I hope so. Heck, I hope humans live past the end of human life on Earth. It would be nice to have humans somewhere else in the universe in some form or another. Although, again, at that point, maybe our entire species will be nothing but machine or machine hybrid intelligence that is not necessarily recognizable as human except for the evolution from human being into whatever that intelligence becomes. I hope so. Although, again, one of the future podcast, they talked about human knowledge. And if all human beings disappeared from the Earth right this moment, they're just gone. How long would it be before all of our knowledge was lost? All right, in preserving our knowledge, how long would it be before all of it was gone? That some visitor to our planet, no matter how intelligent they were, would no longer be able to recover any of our books, any of our music, any of our created knowledge that we have stored in so many forms on this planet. And the answer from the professionals arranged, about 1,000 years. It's maybe closer to 500, but yeah, 500 to 1,000, 1,000 at the outside. After 1,000 years, no, everything's gone. Computers, gone, degraded, turned to dust. CDs, no, CDs are gone by then. Certainly magnetic tapes are gone. Books, long gone. They said, maybe in some special situation, maybe the ideal conditions have come along to preserve some small piece of our knowledge, but for the most part, all gone. Which I think then would be, look, we need to then get, I don't know, an archive of human knowledge, all assembled and, stored on disks of some sort that we put on the moon, maybe. But even then, there's still meteorite impacts. There's still other stuff that can happen. It's just, once we're gone, our knowledge is all lost. Everything, all of Shakespeare, every bit of music ever written, every video game, everything we've ever done, gone. So I hope, since it requires maintenance of some sort, I absolutely hope that something of us, some intelligence of us that can continue preserving and passing along our knowledge, I hope something survives. I kind of expect that it will. By that point, we will have created something that can do that for us, if it's not some version of us ourselves. But, what? Oh, man. There's more to this question. I spent way too long on that, because here's the meat of it. He says, what about Love Boat? Will other intelligent life in the universe get to know the brilliance of Love Boat? Well, yes, in this scenario where we have all of our collected knowledge preserved forever by some continuing intelligence, some entity that can continue to do this for us, of course, Love Boat will still be there. Now, will some other intelligent life in the universe ever get to appreciate its brilliance? No, because it's really a matter of social context, and the brilliance of Love Boat is starting to be lost on us already. And I think 2 generations from now, our grandkids are going to look at it and go, I don't get it. I really don't. I can't fathom this at all. How was this entertainment? I mean, I think our kids would already look at it and think that. But at least they know us and they can understand that, okay, I see what you were going for, but wow, people were really entertained by that? Man. But, no, there's not going to be any scholars 100 years from now poring over Love Boat and talking about its brilliance and dissecting the episodes. No, that's just not going to happen. So, I think human knowledge will be preserved. I think something will be out there. But I think the magic of Love Boat, Oh, it was a moment in time. And now, gone. Sorry. Number 30. Number 30 is way up here. Oh, it's from Stan. Hey, Stan. Stan says, what is your favorite AD&D adventure? That is a hard question to answer because I never played any modules. So you specifically say AD&D adventures. So I'm assuming we're talking about modules here. And I mean, I owned a couple of them, you know, Keep on the Borderlands and the Demon Queen of the Underweb Pits. Anyway, the one with Loth in it. I knew about them, but I've never played any of them. So it's really hard for me to judge. There were some from Dungeon Magazine and from Dragon Magazine before that even that we played, but I don't remember any of them. There was one that when we played it, it was Goblins, I think. It came out of a Dungeon Magazine. And I played it when my parents lived in Japan, so this would have been somewhere around 1991, 92. And we played it out of the Dungeon Magazine, and we played it over Christmas. And it's the one where, you know, you're like sixth-level adventurers, and you're heading down to clear the pit of goblins who have been attacking the village. But it turns out that their lair is so covered with traps and choke points, and it's their terrain, and it's showing you that this is back before, you know, this is, you know, what, second edition? This is first edition, maybe? I don't remember. Not that there was that much difference between them. But it was the idea that this is before monsters could take on character levels, all right? So you're talking about, these are just goblins. That's all it was just goblins. Right, and it had this great atmospheric stuff where they can hear the drums beating, and they can hear, and it built up all the suspense, and then they kept falling into these traps, and horrible things were happening, and it's them versus a horde of goblins. I mean, even, you know, a group of 4 6th-level adventurers should be able to take on 100 goblins, with each one of them with an arm tied behind their back, because this is not a challenge for them. They should have been able to take on this pit of goblins without any trouble at all. This, I mean, ordinary dungeon crawling, right? But no, this is like 50 goblins total, 60, and they barely dragged themselves out of that pit with their lives, barely made it out alive, and it was phenomenal. And I understand that was later turned into an actual module featuring, it had been altered to feature kobolds instead of goblins, because kobolds are even weaker than goblins in AD&D. And thus highlights the effect even further. So, if I understand correctly, that was eventually a module, but I played the original Dungeon Magazine version of it, and it was incredible. It was absolutely stunning. I loved it. That would have to be my favorite AD&D adventure. Of anything we played, that was one of the most memorable. And it was a one-off. We did it over Christmas, you know. We threw together a bunch of characters, and I think they were all halflings, in fact. Just, I can't remember why they decided to do that or why I decided to guide them that way. I can't remember. But they had a group of 6th-level halflings, and it was, you know, Kyle and Rob and my brother Daniel. And they were headed off into the, you know, they're off on some larger mission. And I knew, look, since I knew it was Christmas and I knew we weren't going to be playing long, you know, they set up, they're working for the king, and they have this big noble mission, and they're off on this. And this just turns out to be a side quest, is what they think. They think they've got this big mission to go on. And, hey, as long as we're passing through, can we help out with the goblins? Of course we can. And they go off on what they think is a side quest, and turns out, no, this was the entire intent. This is everything we're going to play, because, you know, we only have a few days. And everybody loved it. We had such a good time. It was, in all of first and second AD&D, it was the greatest adventure we ever played. It was that memorable. We had so much fun. And we played a lot of really good stuff, but that one was so well put together. So there, that's my answer. 54. And this is going to have to be the last one. I have to be. 54 is from Mrs. Darks. All right. Mrs. Darks says, what is the most organized place in your home? Most organized place in my home? I don't have a whole lot of organization in my home. I just don't do that. Although, well, it doesn't have to be me, though, does it? Because my wife is much better at organizing things than I am. She has a place for everything, and when you ask her, she knows where things are. Even when it looks disorganized to me, she knows exactly where everything is. But, you know, you go into her closet, she's got all of her shoes, or you go into her... Oh, she has the most beautiful jewelry box. It is a full-length mirror, and it hangs on the inside of her closet door. So you open up the closet door, she's got a full-length mirror there, and then the mirror itself opens up, and the entire thing is a gigantic jewelry box behind it, and it's got spots for rings and spots for, you know, she must have 20, 30 necklaces hung in there, and bracelets and earrings, and it's just, it's really cool. That is probably the single most organized space in the entire house is that. Or, you know, for laundry, her system. We have downstairs, we already have little hampers that go all the way around so that when we take our laundry downstairs, we sort it out as we take it down. So you carry the laundry down, you're like, okay, underwear, jeans, dark colors, light colors, the towels go over here, and everything's got its own little basket. And then that way, when it's time to do laundry, you grab whatever the fullest basket is and dump it in. And then, you know, if it's not quite a full load, then all right, well, then, you know, you can add in, I've got jeans. Hey, look, dark socks. Let's throw some of those in there or whatever it is that goes with it. So, yeah, if there is any organization in this house, it is entirely up to her because it ain't coming from me. I am just no good at that. But that would probably be it. You know what? Let's do one more. 30. Didn't we do 30? Is R2 telling me we're done? Yeah, we did 30. That was Stans. All right, how about 33? 33 is from Ronster. All right, Ron, you can finish this out. Give me a good one. If you found out there was another Nerd Pride Radio that had been around before you made yours, what would you do? Ooh, would you change your name? And if so, to what? Okay. I would probably just change it to, see, here's the thing, is when I first started, I wanted to be Nerd Pride. That's all I wanted. I wanted to be Nerd Pride, and then this would be the Nerd Pride podcast. But I was just going to go with Nerd Pride. But it turns out some squatter company owns Nerd Pride, and they're not using it. They don't do anything with it. But nerdpride.com is out there on the web, and it is available if you would like to pay them. And I can't remember what the price was to buy it, but it was at least twice as much as I was willing to pay for it. That's, I mean, because, you know, God, if I could have gotten away with buying it for, you know, $20, oh, I could do $20. 50? Oh, it might be worth 50 to become Nerd Pride. That would be pretty cool. But it was well over that. So it was enough that I was not going to do it. So I had to look for alternatives. And I thought about being Nerd Pride Podcast. But ultimately Nerd Pride Radio just sounded better. And so that's what I am. But if there was another Nerd Pride Radio out there, which, by the way, there isn't. If there was another Nerd Pride Radio out there, I would not have named it that. Obviously, I know I'm being pedantic. But if they were out there and they were there before me, I would say, hey, I own the URL, so tough luck. I mean, honestly, yeah, that's really sweet, but I am Nerd Pride Radio because it says right here, nerdprideradio.com. There is no .org. There is no .. This is me, and I've got it. But if they had been out before me and thus had some sort of claim to it, I mean, especially if they were doing a nerd-themed podcast, because, you know, they've got radio in their name. So unless it was like a radio show on some public radio station that is, you know, hundreds of miles away from here. And so it's on some NPR station or PRI station somewhere out there, and they're doing public radio, and they've just called their little, you know, they've got an hour once a week that they do on their local station called Nerd Pride Radio, and thus it's never come to my attention because, well, they don't have their own, you know, they're not independent of that radio station, so their webpage is just a part of that local radio station's page. Oh, that would be a reasonable place where someone could have Nerd Pride Radio before I did. And then, I don't know, I would probably try and come to some agreement with them that neither one of us bothers to change. Although, I really don't want to give up Nerd Pride Radio. I don't. I really like it. I have business cards. Business cards with my logo on it, and it says Mike Jones Nerd right on them. I can't back down from that. Do they have business cards? Yeah, they probably don't. Losers. So no, I would fight for Nerd Pride Radio, and I would fight really hard for it because I really like it. Oh wait, no. When I say I would fight hard for it, I would fight hard for it till the point where I had to pay money for a lawyer. And then I'd back down. Damn. So what would I call it if it wasn't Nerd Pride Radio? I have no idea. I've never even thought about that. Because it would have to be some variation on nerd. I mean, where do you go from there? I have no idea. Although, you know what, I may cash in on the whole Podomatic thing. And you know, I could become the Nerdomatic podcast. I could be something like that. That would probably be where I played into it. Something that still builds on the themes that I already have going. That would be my guess. Apparently we're doing one more. 85. Because I also realized I put out a notice on Facebook for listener betrayal, but I think I got distracted before I got to the one on my website. So I don't know how much listener betrayal we're going to have today. So we'll do one more. 85. Oh, 85's Humongous. Humongous says, do you like Mongolian barbecue? And then, well, Mongolian barbecue. Have I had Mongolian barbecue? And how is it different from any other barbecue? Hold on a second. Let me check. Because I'm guessing I haven't. Oh, gotcha. See, I was fooled by the word barbecue. Hoo-hot counts as Mongolian barbecue, technically. Because, all right, which also, let's note, because, and this is just from Wikipedia, Mongolian barbecue was invented in a Taiwanese restaurant, and it is, you know, and again, you call it Mongolian because it makes it sound exotic and, you know, gives it this link to, whatever. And it turns out, yeah, Mongolian barbecue is A, not Mongolian, and B, only vaguely related to barbecue because it really involves frying, stir frying everything on a huge grill. So it's really hardly traditional barbecue either, although when you go to Hoo-Hot, you know, it is, you know, your meat and your vegetables and then a variety of sauces, some of which have barbecue in their name, and usually I use a little bit of barbecue in mine, but that's beside the point. In that sense, yes, I love specifically Hoo-Hot Mongolian Grill. I have been to other Mongolian grills as well, but Hoo-Hot is the one that I keep coming back to. And I love Hoo-Hot. Holy crap, I love Hoo-Hot. So the answer there was yes. Yes, I have. And I love it. And what is it about barbecue? Was the second part of your question? Well, I don't know about that. I just know that I really like Hoo-Hot. And I've got it down to almost a science. The problem is I do Hoo-Hot the same way I cook, in that I put ingredients together and I have a general idea of what I like, and I have a general idea of what works, but I never know my exact proportions. So therefore, it's never exactly the same twice. It's close sometimes. Sometimes it's way off. But it's never exactly the same. It's like me making meatloaf. I love to make meatloaf. I really do. But my meatloaf on any given day, the only commonalities in my meatloaf is that it's going to have ground beef in it, it's going to have a couple of eggs in it, and it's probably going to be covered with ketchup when I go to eat it. Other than that, almost anything could go in. And sometimes it's not ketchup, because sometimes I go with more of a barbecue theme, so I use barbecue sauce on it. Sometimes it's a... But my meatloaf could be... I mean, again, it's going to be meat, and then, okay, oh, look, we've got half a can of breadcrumbs left over from the Italian stuff we had the other night. All right, let's dump those in instead. Or hey, look, I've got a whole package of saltines up here that... How long have they been on the shelf? They could probably... You know what? They're probably getting close. Let's just crumple those up and put them in. Oh, wait. Look, we have a leftover box of cornflakes from when we made those dessert treats the other day. Yeah, let's just crumble up some cornflakes and put them in there. Whatever. It could be anything. I mean, I've done meatloaf where I've used potato chips as part of the breading, or I've done meatloaf where I've used, you know, like I say, cornflakes or Chex Mix, or, I mean, there's lots of, not Chex Mix, but the actual Chex cereal that we had left over after we made Chex Mix with it. So, you know, that, anything could go in there. And then, you know, usually you need something wet. You know, I've got all my spices, and I'll pull down a mix of spices that seem to match the ingredients I'm putting into it. And then I need something wet in there. So sometimes it's a little extra ketchup. Sometimes it's milk. Sometimes barbecue sauce is a popular one with my kids. God, I used ranch dressing last time. That one came out really good. My ranch-flavored meatloaf, that was awesome. And so, anyway, I'm getting way too focused on meatloaf. Let me back up and go, okay, now my hoo-hot is a lot like that. It's, I know what ingredients I like, but the proportions of them, and, you know, I know I like chicken best of all when I go to hoo-hot. Sometimes I'll throw in a little bit of the spicy sausage, or sometimes I'll throw in, you know, whatever, but I know I like chicken. And I know which vegetables I like, which is not many of them. And then I get down to my sauces, and it's like, oh, I love the peanut sauce, but it's always, the peanut sauce is just a little add-on. So you get a little bit of peanut sauce, but then you get some spice, and you get some something hot, something tangy, something. Yeah. Anyway, and it all comes together. I don't know. I love hoo-hot. I would, if it wasn't so damn expensive, and if it wasn't 100 miles away from me, it's actually 79 miles away. It's the closest hoo-hot to me. The closest Mongolian grill to where I live is 79 miles away. If it wasn't for that, I would eat there all the damn time. But yeah, love Mongolian Grill. Absolutely. All right, have we done enough? Yeah, you know what? Let's bring out GLaDOS. Come on, GLaDOS, give us a recap, and I will put together some credits for us.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is, I think I only used, oh no, I did Pod People. So I've got My Son the Astronaut by Oppenheimer and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use on this podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out. You buy them. You enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, just like my handy-dandy Pocket Mod, go over to PocketMod.com. They will give you instructions for printing and downloading your very own Pocket Mod for free. You want to do something nice for my podcast? Recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then tell other people. Spread the word. Let them enjoy it as well. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. And if you want to contact me, Mike@NerdPrideRadio.com, @NerdPrideRadio on Twitter, Facebook.com/NerdPrideRadio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to get a hold of me, you want to talk to me, you want to form a relationship, you want to bond with me, come over to my forums at NerdPrideRadio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. All right, now it's time for that listener betrayal. The beginning of every podcast, right before I start recording, I go ahead and put that on Facebook and I say, hey, I'm recording. If you want to join us, you want to add something to this podcast, now is the time to do it. I also usually do that on my forums as well, but I think I forgot this time. Let's go take a look. Let's see, on my forums. Oh, yeah, no, I know I didn't go in there. Darn it. I'm so bad at this. So, okay, not there, but on Facebook. Somebody? Anybody? Not a word. Oh, so sad. So, let's go in and... oh, look at that. 5 people reached. Oh, wait, no, look, there's a response. Darn it, Nelly always responds. Why was it not showing up as a notification? Okay, let's see. Nelly says, hi, hope all is... hi, because I said say hi. And so she did. Hope all is well as usual. I'm trying to save money and come up with budgets. What are your best money-saving tips? Oh, that is a good one. Money-saving tips. I'm not very good at saving money, so really not a great guy to ask on this one. But let me think. I don't know. I'm trying to think of things to say that aren't just, you know, obvious common sense platitudes that don't really contribute a whole lot to you. I would start off with my first advice is make sure that you and, in this case, your husband, make sure you and your husband are communicating about it and you're on the same page about what your financial goals are, because, you know, you trying to save money when he's not on board with the same concepts and he doesn't have the same priorities, huge issue. Even if you have separate finances at this point, and I know a lot of married couples do, whether you have joint finances or separate finances, what one of you spends certainly affects the other one. So I would make sure that you're both on board together and you're communicating about this, that you have common goals that you are working towards together, because that will make all the difference in the world. Second, I would look at some of your big money expenditures. For example, for a lot of people, especially in the information age that we live in, what, if anything, do you pay for your phone? What, if anything, do you pay for, your data connections in general, whether it's just the phone or whether it's some other internet connection? What are you paying for your entertainments, your television or your, whether it is TV through cable or satellite, or if you're just doing Roku, like I do, doing, the Netflix and the Amazon and the Hulu. Those can be huge expenses. Or another one that can fall in this category, insurance, whether it's insurance on a vehicle or it's insurance for your home, or whether it's, there's a lot of these big expenditures that come on weird plans and, your health insurance, for example, they intentionally have obscure and Byzantine plans for a lot of these because they make money on confusing people and getting people to spend more than they need to. And with a lot of them, if you call in and talk to them, a lot of times you can get a cheaper rate because, you've been using the same, cable TV plan for the last 5 years, and which doesn't apply to you, but you know what I mean. But as an example, you've had the same cable plan for 5 years and things have changed. And if you call in and you check with them, oh, look, there's a much nicer plan that you've been getting and that you could be getting, and you could save, $20 a month on it. All right. That's not a huge amount compared to what some people are paying for cable TV. But, you could save a little bit on it, or your phone plan, or again, whether it's car insurance, homeowners insurance, renters insurance, auto insurance, all of these things you can look into changing, and you can shave them down a little bit. It's just things like that. One of the other huge expenditures is food, and that's one that everyone realizes that, we probably shouldn't eat out as much as we do. We probably should, cook more meals at home, and that's a really basic one. Now, again, not as huge a deal for you because you guys don't have children at this point, at least not that I know of. And, I've got 4 kids. Food is a huge expenditure for me. I mean, the difference between, going out to McDonald's where we can spend $40 for 6 of us to eat. I've got 3 teenage kids, for God's sake. Well, actually, Jacob's no longer a teenager, but still, he falls in that same kind of category. But, I could spend $40 at McDonald's. I can easily spend, $80 to $120 if we go out to a nice restaurant. Or I can cook a meal at home that a cooking meal at home can still be, up to $25, up to $30 to cook a meal at home. But that also winds up feeding everybody and having leftovers that we have, lunches for the next couple of days. We get a lot of use out of that money. Although some of my cheapest meals, I can make a meal for 6 of us for, $12, $15 sometimes. But I would say 20 is closer to the average, and we could cut that back more if we wanted to. But we, you know, if we're going to be going to all that effort of cooking at home and you know, stuff that we're going to be eating for a regular, you know, for an extended period of time, we don't want to skimp on it. We want it to be stuff that we enjoy. Now, you guys, with just two of you, you're in a different situation, but food is still an expenditure. And if you're cooking at home, finding a way to make it economical for you, because it's harder when you're cooking for just one or just two, because you buy all the ingredients and, sometimes it's harder to cook small. You'll have a lot more leftovers. You'll have a lot, you know. Anyway, but food is always a huge expenditure to look out for. I don't know. I would, again, sit down with your finances and look at where the biggest chunk of your money is going. It's not a, you know, because you can talk about, you know, conserving energy here, you know, conserving a little bit of gas there, or shaving some money off your entertainment budget. But if it turns out that those aren't where the lion's share of your money goes, you know, yeah, trimming every nickel, every dollar that you can save in any situation is always good. That's always a good idea. You know, if you're the kind of person that, oh, hey, look, maybe if I stop buying $5 lattes at Starbucks and instead, you know, pick up something cheaper, or, you know, bring my own drinks from home, switch to something that, you know, okay, yeah, that's a good one. If you're the kind of person that has a $5 or $6 latte every single day, then yeah, you could save a crap ton of money cutting back on that. But I'm getting sidetracked on the idea of latte. That was just bringing up as an example. But again, every little bit helps. But a lot of times people aren't looking at the biggest expenditure they have in their lives, much like, the American populace is so focused on, and this is, I'm not wanting to get into a liberal diatribe here or anything, but we focus so much on little things in this country that, oh, if we could just cut back on government waste, if we could just trim the budgets and quit wasting so much money here and there, you know, if we could quit giving out money for these arts programs, or if we could quit giving out money, to these benefits recipients, you know, people who are on food stamps or whatever. But when you look at the total of U.S. government spending, the lion's share is spent on paying off our debt. The lion's share is spent on the military. The lion's share is spent on a bunch of untouchable programs that we can't do anything about. And so we look at this huge budget that we have, and the public debate that goes around on what we should be cutting to save money on our budget is a debate that focuses on this tiny little slice over here, that we're looking at 5% of our budget and saying, okay, out of this 5%, how do we cut enough to save the, you know, 20% that we need? Well, you know what? It's not a big enough slice. You could eliminate the entire goddamn slice and you still haven't saved enough money. You have to target the big stuff. And that's what I would recommend for you. Again, look, you and your husband get on board together, and work out a plan, and you're smart people and you'll figure stuff out. But yeah, my first thing would be to say, hey, look at the biggest stuff in your life and see if there's ways to trim those big things down. And if food is one of your biggest expenditures, then okay, yeah, look at your lifestyle and how you're eating and where you're eating. Or if your biggest stuff is going into, TV, electronics, communications, internet, I mean, you know, all that electronic stuff, is there a way to bundle it all together and save money? Is there a way to switch companies that saves you money? Is there a way to, you know, if that's where your money's going, then that's what you need to be looking at. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know if any of that's helpful. I have no idea. Again, I feel like I still, even though I said I didn't want to, I feel like I just spewed out a whole bunch of, you know, general common sense platitudes that, well, duh, of course we thought of that. I don't know. It's all I got. And you were my only listener betrayal, so I had to spend all my time on it. But anyway, hey. You guys have been awesome. I appreciate it. You guys have a great night. I'm off to bed. Say goodnight, R2.